Tom Casperson, thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
The first congressional district, which used to be called, I think, the 11th district, it's been represented by somebody from the Upper Peninsula for a long time. You would continue that tradition. Do you think it's important to elect somebody from the UP for this district?
Yeah, I don't know that it's the critical thing, the component to it as far as the region. I think they just need to understand Northern Michigan issues, and we need to elect the right person. People who get caught up in that, probably both sides, you'll have people below the bridge thinking maybe let's vote for somebody down here, and the UPers will say let's keep a guy up there. But I would hope they check us all out and really vote the person versus the region.
And what would you say to somebody from the Lower Peninsula who might be skeptical of you being from the UP?
Yeah, I would just hopefully get to talk to them about the issues and let them get to know me. And my hope is that that's ultimately what gets you elected, is people understand who you are and get to know who you are. And they like maybe where you're going versus the other person and give you a vote. I just don't think it's a good way to vote if we're just going to vote based on geographical location versus who the person is.
Earlier this month, a plurality of Republicans in this district went for Donald Trump in the Republican presidential primary. On the Democratic side, a majority went for Bernie Sanders. And really across the country, many outsider candidates are having success. What kind of congressman would you be?
Well, I think looking at the state level, the things we've worked on, I don't plan on changing that. I follow through with the same thing. And I've tried to stay true to who I am. I've tried to be honest with people. I think people that know me and have talked to me would know that and have seen that. And so everything I've done on the state level really is tied in tightly with what's happening on the federal level. The issues are similar. In fact, the argument I make is the overreach from the federal government has caused problems we're faced with here in Michigan and Northern Michigan. And I'm one that's convinced most of the governing should take place on the state level. The federal government should allow the states to govern. And what's happening is the federal government is taking money from us, and then they give the money back with strings attached to it. And so they dictate how we govern. And I think we've gotten it backwards. And so much of what I've done here, I would try to do in Washington, only that Washington needs to be limited in their scope and their size.
And what issues of overreach would you want to work on? On day one.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. A lot of it is the regulatory side of things. When you look at departments like the EPA, the Forest Service would be a prime example. I come out of the timber industry, and we've got federal forests right now. Their practice of managing forests has gone way hard to the left. It's kind of a come see and look, but don't touch attitude. That doesn't work well for our communities that live around them. When you have a timber industry that's very large and has a huge impact on a state's economy, and it's not just Michigan. I've been partnering with Wisconsin as well, working on these type of issues. It's the Forest Service and the federal forests that have been choking us off, and you've got mills that need the supply, and they've decided they're going to go a different route. An example would be the Forest Service for over 30 years put up 11 billion board feet. For 30 years they did that. And we're below 2 billion board feet right now annually being put up. There's something wrong, and they own more land now than they ever did.
That's a measurement of how much?
Timber.
Okay.
Yeah. And that's one small example of how I've seen the federal government take our way of life and just flip it upside down and have some type of concept or idea, I guess, out of Washington, how they know better what we need than we do. And they're not listening to the local folks. And that was we've held joint hearings on that issue since I've been in the Senate. Senator Tiffany out of Wisconsin and I started it. It's grown to our congressional delegation. I worked a lot with Dan Beneshek on that issue with those joint hearings. We've actually had some success. The Federal Forest Service is now starting to allow the DNR in Michigan, to manage some portions of the forest when it comes to timber harvesting. So in a little way, we've had a little bit of success, but we need a lot more of that.
Besides the timber industry, what other areas of regulation do you see restricting small businesses from growing in this district? Because you've written about that some in some of your campaign material. What kinds of regulations would you want to do away with?
Well, it's a matter of the regulation isn't the problem. It's how the regulation's written and how it impacts. When you talk about the federal versus the state again, We have the federal forest. When you look at tourism as an example, trying to put trail systems together, you got the federal forest talking about, in my district, they want to run their trails north and south, and we want to, on from the state level, run our trails mainly east and west, so you can run across the district versus just straight up and down. And up and down, it wouldn't be bad either. But instead of coordinating with us, they're holding fast to how they want to do it, and they won't coordinate with us on the state level, so we can come up with a trail system we could just be proud of, and everybody could use it, dedicate trails so people use the trails and don't wander off into areas they shouldn't be. Instead of that, they hang fast with their philosophy, and there's an example of where the department, based in Washington, is dictating to local people how they're even going to have trail systems for recreational purposes. It just doesn't seem like they're listening to the people, and they're not talking to the people that live in the communities. And when I talk about the trail systems, the reason I bring that up is because our small business people in these little communities want to bring people into their businesses. That's the whole idea of the business side of the trails, is to bring people in, spend their money, and create some economic value to it. And they won't listen to that part of it. They only want to say, this is our process and this is how you're going to do it. That's got to change. That they should not be dictating from Washington how we do things like that.
Let's talk about another environmental issue. The oil pipeline that crosses the Straits of Mackinac, Line 5. Many environmental groups in this district say that it's a problem, that it's unsafe. Enbridge, the company that runs it, says that it's fine, that it's safe. What do you think should be done about it?
Well, I think they need to, their Enbridge feet need to be held to the fire. They need to be definitely be proving that it's safe at this point. And I believe there needs to be some, maybe a third entity or a middle of the road entity that can make that determination. And I say that because as much as I would say Enbridge should be held accountable, so should the environmental groups be held accountable. It's too easy to just say it's bad. Let's prove it's bad or let's prove it's good, but let's have a neutral party that doesn't go in with a bias one way or the other would be my choice, because the environmental groups have been found to be wrong at times just as well. So that to me is where we've gotten into trouble, is we run to either side in an extreme. Either you defend the company at all costs or whatever the environmental group says must be. We need to have a third party, and if it is older, so it's certainly a valid concern and something we should be paying attention to, but I would also say, let's have some discussion on what's the alternatives. What are we going to do if it's determined that it does need to be taken out? Do we replace it? And if we're going to replace it, I'd really be curious to see what would happen with those same environmental groups. Would they be in there supporting Enbridge for permitting processes and everything else to put a brand new state-of-the-art pipeline in? Or would they oppose that? And if they oppose that, okay, then what is the alternative to move the product that many of us ultimately in a global scale now consume? So those are the questions I would have. And if there's an alternative way of moving the product, then let's have that discussion.
Do you think they should business should operate as usual right now with the pipeline? Should the oil still flow at this point?
Nobody's indicated anything to me that there is a problem to the point of shutting the flow down. There has been inspections done. But I think that gets to, let's have a third party verify. Just recently, I ran into two workers in the Mackinac City area. We stopped at Burger King to grab a coffee, and they had the yellow vests on. And I ironically asked them if they were Bridge Authority people, thought they came from the Mackinac Bridge, and found out they were Enbridge employees. They were actually on the ground working on the pipeline. And I got to tell you, I wish people would talk to the employees that are working on it, because I got a different perspective from them. And they, too, encourage people to come and talk and come look for themselves and talk to the people on the ground that are doing it. Sometimes these issues, I fear we get caught up in a bubble, either Lansing or Washington, and it's bantering back and forth between business community, maybe an environmental community, and they're bantering back and forth, and nobody's talking to anybody on the ground to what's actually happening and going on. And I just think they gave me a pretty good perspective of, stop the rhetoric, let's talk about the facts.
You do have some critics on the right who say that you aren't conservative enough, and they point to your vote in favor of Medicaid expansion in the state Senate as an example of that, that you're more moderate.
Right.
What kind of legislator are you?
I think I'm very conservative. The issue at hand is, who gets to pick and choose the votes to determine who you are and judge who you are. I'd say judge my record. If you're going to pick one vote and then determine who I am, I think that's very unfair. I'm very conservative. In fact, I would argue that I don't think there's anybody more conservative than I am when it comes to regulatory side of things. You know, you cite some people are saying this. I've talked to some people that are saying that, and in fact tried to work with them when it came to our issues that were very conservative issues, pushing back on overreach of federal government overreach. And when I asked for help, they wouldn't show up and help me. They didn't think that was a big enough issue. But I would argue that issue and the pushing back that we did now has accumulated 500 jobs in my district. And that's just the on-the-ground jobs. That doesn't count the spin-off jobs, and it doesn't count what's coming. I think we've had a lot of success taking those stands. I'd love to see more of my colleagues stand up with me and take those stands, and I think they're very conservative stands. But again, if we're not going to talk about those type of issues that I've stood for, then I can be prejudged by others that want to do that. I can't do anything about that. I just got to get out there and talk to people about my message.
The unemployment rate in the country and in the state has dipped below 5%. But, you know, a lot of people in northern Michigan and the Upper Peninsula don't feel like the recovery really has touched them yet. What do you offer those people who feel like they've been left behind?
Yeah, I think they're accurate in that there's a sense, there's a mood, and that really comes, I believe, from the federal government and comes from that overreach that I keep talking about. We've got wonderful opportunities in this state, whether it be tourism, whether it be mining, whether it be logging, whether it be manufacturing, whether it be the technical trades that are involved in a lot of the research and development. Look at the universities we have. We've got a lot of parts in place to be a state that could be a leader in the country. I can tell you from my perspective in my district that I represent today, the folks that I represent are really getting tired of asking the government for permission to go to work. And that's what we keep running into. And you see the opportunity, it's right before you, and we can't get over the hurdle because we keep getting roadblocks and opposition from the government. I'll give you an example. We tried to build a road in my district. It was about a 22-mile road. It would have been an $80 million project. There's already a road there. It's a gravel road. The company was going to pay for it, so it wasn't even government money that was going to pay for the road. Private money, private sector going to work, a two-year project, $80 million, and the EPA stopped us. And now we found out through emails, not only did they stop us, they had prejudged the project, and they had informed Senator Boxer in California that that haul road will never be built. That exchange took place before the Marquette County Road Commission ever applied for the permits. So they let us go through this process. That's what my people keep seeing. And we're wondering why the government has so much power to be able to tell us we can't even go to work. And nobody's trying to dodge issues, the standards. We wanted to do it with the highest standards. That's not the issue. There's agendas at play here, and the government's driving those agendas. And that's where this feeling's coming from that I sense with a lot of the citizens. They know there's potential work, good work, and yet we can't seem to get over that hurdle.
What areas of economic growth could you imagine taking off in this district if you were elected?
Well, I think on the tourism side of it, tourism needs a lot of components to it. We need to build things and we need to develop things in order to have some tourism and develop and grow that tourism. If that's nothing but a hurdle every time they try to do it, you slow that opportunity down. On the manufacturing side of it, I mentioned the mining. We have mining in my district. We haven't promoted the mining. It's always been a hurdle to try and do it. The standards and the way we do it are so different than what it used to be that it's so changed. But we don't grow the mining opportunity and then the value-added products that come from that mining. All those issues could be part of a growth process within our state. And then you're sitting on top of some of the greatest universities in the country, if not the world. So you're sitting there with people that could, entities that can train the workforce to do exactly that and build and grow our economy. We're not promoting those things because what ultimately happens is the agendas that I keep talking about, they seem to get in the way. And then you've got the government deciding what projects they like and what projects they don't, instead of trying to enhance the projects that who we are and our way of life, and let us determine some of that, meaning the local people, meaning the states and the local units of government. That's what I see holding us back. And if you remove those barriers, I think it would be amazing to see what starts happening. with high standards. I think Michigan should be proud of the idea that we've done it with high standards. I supported the toughest standards in the country. In fact, Governor Granholm said they probably were the toughest in the world to go mining. If we can't do it, then who can?
One of the economic drivers of this region are the lakes. And what should be done about the Soo Locks, where there's really only one lock that's functional, that can handle the kinds of big ships that are going through the lakes? What should we do?
Yeah, that's a great question. We held joint hearings over in the Soo. I chair transportation in the Senate. Senator Smith chairs Commerce. He was there. Senator Horn was also there with his committee. So we had three committees, joint hearing, talking to the officials and really petitioning the Army Corps to start paying more attention to what's going on there. We believe what needs to happen at the locks is you need to twin the locks. You need two of them. Right now they have the pole. It's the only one that can handle a 1,000-foot freighter. If that goes down, the big freighters are done until the lock is restored. That is, we've learned that that is a dangerous scenario because of the impact it has, not just on Michigan and not just on the Soo area, but the entire region of the country. It's that big of a deal. And so we think it should be twin locks put in there. They could expand one that's right side by side with the pole. The problem has been the Army Corps has not given it a high priority because they claim there's alternative solutions to that problem if the lock goes down. What I think we've gained is dismissing that. And in other words, I'll give you an example of what they say is an alternative. They're saying that trucks would be an avenue to move the freight. Well, we found out one ore freighter, it would take 2,700 trucks to move the same product in one ore freighter. That's unrealistic. You can't do that.
Building a second lock would be a big project. How do you pay for a project like this in an era where it's tough to get money for anything?
Yeah, the Army Corps has money for this. They take taxes from the freight industry, the community that's out there with the boats now. There's taxes taken, built up, and then the Army Corps uses that money to work on projects around the country. Now, that's where the priority comes in. What's priority seems to get the money, but the problem is who gets to determine the priority, and right now it's been the Army Corps. Well, what we found out was, based on how they assess the Soo Locks, we think it's faulty or false as far as the assessment they're applying. That's where we think we've gained some ground and where the hearings paid off, because when we exposed what they were saying was their determination was the problem. So if we can get them to change that designation and raise the Soo Locks up into the priority, the Army Corps has money to start these projects and get them going. I think the states, the Great Lakes states, actually could be a player in this as well, especially when you understand the impact of those locks for everybody. So I think it should be a combined effort, but the Army Corps certainly needs to take the lead. Until they take the lead, you can't get anywhere.
And last question, who did you support in the Republican presidential primary?
I supported Kasich going into it, but it doesn't matter. I think the Republican bench is deep, and we're narrowing it down to a couple now. And at the end of the day, I'm going to support the Republican nominee when they come out.
Tom Casperson, nice to have you here.
Thank you.